Thank you for the introduction. I also appreciate the invitation to be here. It's a privilege. I've really enjoyed the morning session. There have been some great talks, some nice themes, and I hope to address some of those as I talk about our particular example in these networks. It was also nice to see Sky again. I haven't seen Sky in a few years. She used to work with us in Las Cruces before she got captured by the NRCS in Lincoln. It's nice to see you have the same enthusiasm and energy levels before, Sky. That's great. Imagine 100 loosely connected sites, kind of these networks, distributed mostly around the United States, where you could do many of the kinds of ideas that have been talked about this morning. You could do the site-specific kinds of studies. You could do studies that look at more than just the production characteristics, but more the environmental accounting. You could do the long-term research that we desperately need. And you could do it in some fashion that was synergistic, that was connected with other sites of similar interests. That's what we envisioned over the last 25 years, is we've forced our way into these particular networks. In fact, not only the long-term agricultural research network and the long-term ecological research network and the National Ecological Observation Network, but also most recently the U.S. Climate Change Hub Network that was formed in the last year. And we forced our way into that network, even though I'm not sure it'll survive the politics of the next 2 years in the United States, even though it's desperately needed. There's some wonderful climate science being done around the globe, but certainly in the United States, and it's really fantastic. But many of the people engaged in that research will tell you that they're not reaching the people on the ground often. And networks like that Climate Change Hub Network are really needed to do that. We'll see. But I'll talk about the networks that I know will exist and persist over time in this discussion. But what I really want to get at, besides describing some of their characteristics, I want to kind of create a seed in your mind that there's an opportunity to do many of the kinds of things you've been talking about this morning in association with these networks. There is an opportunity to influence the kinds of things that are being done at these sites. And we are talking about a $4 billion research infrastructure that exists. It's astonishing. In fact, it's even been created and expanded in the last few years despite U.S. economic characteristics. There is an opportunity, I think, for people in this society to interact with this entity, and so I'll try to talk about that. Let me first start, though, with the newest network, the Long-Term Agroecosystem Research Network. That's primarily ARS. It also includes some non-ARS sites. It's 18 sites across the nation. There are none in California. That's an issue. I think it will be addressed in the coming year or two, and you'll see a few more sites added to this network. But as it exists now, it goes all the way from the wheat fields of the Pacific Northwest to the beef cow calf operations on rangelands in the Southwest to the expansive corn fields of the upper Midwest, the small farms in the South, and dairy pastures in Pennsylvania. It's a group that have gotten together to really commonly talk about science and structure of their science. Without a doubt, though, its initial formation, what really drove it, was to try to firm up this infrastructure of these large, long-term sites within USDA and some collaborators to maintain this capacity over time to look at agricultural and natural resource research issues. To be honest, 4 or 5 years ago, and I'm with an ARS research unit in Las Cruces, New Mexico, we had very serious discussions at both a local all the way to the Washington, D.C. level of pulling our research unit out of the ARS and USDA and moving it to another federal research agency within the Department of Interior. We were not sure that the USDA ARS was going to keep a long-term commitment, even though we were a 100-year-old site tied into these other networks, I think fairly productive, lots of attributes. We just weren't sure that they were going to maintain that commitment. When we saw this request for proposals to join the LTAR advertised several years ago, we stopped those discussions. We saw a place for us over time to exist within this particular network. We think it's extremely valuable. But not just because of that infrastructure and feeling like you were now embraced by the USDA research organization, but because we also envisioned, and we are starting to see the development of science that connects all of these sites. Now, what I'm showing you here are the draft objectives for a common experiment across all 18 sites that I think has room for ideas from people that aren't specifically directly associated with this network. I think there's opportunities here to influence the kinds of things that are looked at. But let me describe these objectives. And again, I'm here just as a person as part of this network and involved in this process and just offering these perspectives. The objectives are, first, number one, a common experiment. So every site, and every site's already done this, every site's identified two basic treatments. One is a treatment where you look at the conventional agriculture, whatever that might be, at the scale of that particular site. And then you're going to compare that to another agricultural system where you might be looking at environmental accounting. You're looking at a broader array of ecosystem services being provided, what we call an aspirational system. That is not to say the conventional system at its time wasn't also aspirational. But we now know more things. What might we do in these systems if we could really push them a little bit differently? And maybe that isn't more productively, but a broader array of services. Every site's actually already identified these comparisons, but they still need to be tweaked and formulated. The second objective, though, is what measurements, what indices, what processes would you be interested in measuring? And we've had some discussion of the array of processes that might be important in this discussion in this symposium this morning, that need to be looked at, that would be commonly looked at across all these sites. I think this is where this group could have some distinct influences on those kinds of measurements. The third thing, though, and the point was made in one of the earlier talks, you still, even with a network, even looking broadly across the country at an array of kinds of production systems, you still have to understand the system you're standing in. And so that third objective has to do with drilling down and understanding the site. And that's still important. And then the fourth objective is really an objective associated with operating as a network. Sharing these data, trying to put together our understanding, a common understanding, looking at different kinds of attributes across the entire country in all these different production systems. It'll probably take us another year or two to really build this plan, starting from these objectives. You're seeing it early in the process, but it certainly could be influenced. We are open. This needs to be an open, transparent network. And in addition, let me give you an example of the kind of synergy that can happen. So at our site, Jeff Herrick and Nick Webb, working with people like Ted Zobik, have decided to set up a protocol to try to build a wind erosion model and use this network. So how do you instrument, calibrate, monitor, and validate a wind erosion model that would apply? Now, they're not going to use all the sites across the network, but a portion of them, and they're now kind of pitching this idea to many of these sites. That's a tremendous synergy. That's one of the first examples of these kinds of opportunities that I think exist for the broader science community. Another network that we've been involved in for 25 years, and there are some lessons to be learned from being involved in this network, is the NSF-supported Long-Term Ecological Research Network. This is, and it says, approximately 25 sites. That's because one site has failed in the last few months. It's NSF Review, the one in central New Mexico, and it will be shut down in the next few years. But that also creates opportunity. I fully expect NSF to release a new RFP for another site in the West. If I was in Nevada or Southern California or Arizona, I would be thinking about putting together a team to apply to get into this network. This is a $1 to $2 billion research infrastructure that's been tremendous, and it has the opportunity to expand. These are its objectives. I think it's been extremely effective at many of these objectives. The LTER program has been very good at site understanding. They've really made some amazing advances in science for their particular site. But if you look at these objectives, nor do you see an objective really associated with being a network. And I guess that's one observation I would make about LTER. Even though they have tremendous strengths, local science, synthesis, they've been extremely good, and that's very important, and many of the speakers this morning have talked about that need to synthesize information. They've been very good at metadata, and we know that's a huge problem in our research, is having the appropriate metadata for things that are in our files. And they've been extremely good at K-12 education. Our site alone, I mean, we all do field days and things like that. Our site alone last year worked directly with, through the K-12 program, 20,000 school kids. And we see improved science scores by these kids. It's amazing. But it's an eclectic science network. And is it really a network if you're losing sites? It's been amazing to track what's happened as this particular site in the last few months has been dropped. That's not how a network should work. The other thing that I would mention about this network, and it's a place where I think LTER can learn from, the science has been very eclectic. If you go to the LTER data portal and you search soils, you'll find 1,392 soil data sets, very well documented. But is there really a theme? Can you really build on these? You can build on them for site understanding, but across the country in these biological systems, that's very difficult. For example, here's a wonderful data set that comes from Las Cruces. It's 25 plus years, multiple plant communities, multiple sampling points, multiple times of the year, multiple depths looking at soil moisture. It's incredible. But does that really build on a network? It's very eclectic. And I think LTAR needs to learn from that, and that's where this society can influence the building of our science within the LTAR system. And then that finally takes me to NEON. Funded by the National Science Foundation through a nonprofit in Colorado, 60 sites around the country, this is all about measurement. This is all about observations. This is being built now. It's over 500 observations per site. These are their objectives. It's an incredibly engineered undertaking. If you look at these objectives, nowhere do you really see science. It's about observation. And those would be my comments. There's an example on the left there. That's one of the towers. This is in a system, an arid system, so the tower's relatively short. But these are instrumented towers associated with instrumented field sites adjacent to those towers. That'll be heavily monitored. This is a 30-year program. You're talking about several billion dollars worth of engineering. It is extremely hyped. NSF released their top accomplishments of their decades in existence recently, and it included NEON. NEON hasn't generated a stick of data yet. That's crazy. But they are promoting it. But nowhere do we see science, really, in this. We see observations and measurements. They've had a tough time hanging on to a science officer, and that position is now vacant, if anybody would like that challenge. In finishing, let me come back to those four LTAR objectives that I think are really important. The first one, the common experiment, I think that's really unique. And it's common, it's just unique to LTAR, to be able to look at these systems and make comparisons in some uniform fashion across the ag systems and the natural resource systems in the U.S. It's amazing. Indices. The indices is actually very NEON-like. We have an opportunity, though, to influence what's actually measured. What are the processes of importance? The site understanding, that's very LTER-like. But it is critical that we drill down and have that understanding. And lastly, that regional national models, I think, really makes us a network. So I think we're trying to build on all of these networks to make LTAR be a little more synergistic and respond to the kinds of things that have been said this morning. So I'll tell you this. In the last 5 years, the financial resources we have to do our research have doubled in a climate that's not really one for growth. And it's because of these activities. We'll survive. We'll continue to function. But I'm not sure that these networks can function and continue very well unless more people get involved. We need company. We need other ideas. We need the kind of expansiveness that I've heard in here this morning for this to really expand. And somebody in the West, some institution and entity or group in the West, in the next few years could join not only LTER, but LTAR and NEON will expand. So the opportunity exists to join a $4 billion infrastructure, but more importantly, the opportunity exists, I think, to influence the science we're doing within this infrastructure. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.